Chapter 80. Orleans, and was by no means sure that he would continue the story beyond that point. Now, however, he was determined to reach the tale's tragic conclusion. To H. H. Rogers, in New York. Edited, Sunday, September 9th, 94. Dear Mr. Rogers, I drove the quill too hard, and I broke down in my head. It has now been 3 days since I laid up. When I wrote you a week ago, I had added 10,000 words or thereabout to Joan. Next day I added 1,500, which was a proper enough day's work, though not a full one. But during Tuesday and Wednesday I stacked up an aggregate of 6,000 words, and that was a very large mistake. My head hasn't been worth a cent since. However, there's a compensation. For in those 2 days I reached, and passed successfully, a point which I was solicitous about before I ever began the book. Viz. The Battle of Patay. Because that would naturally be the next to the last chapter of a work consisting of either two books or one. In the one case one goes right along from that point, as I shall do now. In the other he would add a wind-up chapter, and make the book consist of Joan's childhood and military career alone. I shall resume work today, and hereafter I will not go at such an intemperate rate. My head is pretty cobwebby yet. I am hoping that along about this time I shall hear that the machine is beginning its test in the Herald office. I shall be very glad indeed to know the result of it. I wish I could be there. Sincerely yours, S50. Clemens. Rouen, where Joan met her martyrdom, was only a short distance away, and they halted there en route to Paris, where they had arranged to spend the winter. The health of Susie Clemens was not good, and they lingered in Rouen, while Clemens explored the old city, and incidentally did some writing of another sort. In a note to Mr. Rogers he said, "Colin, to put in my odd time I am writing some articles about Paul Burgett, and his out-dreamer chapters, laughing at them, and at some of our oracular owls who find them important. What the hell makes them important, I should like to know." He was still at Rouen 2 weeks later, and had received encouraging news from Rogers concerning the typesetter, which had been placed for trial in the office of the Chicago Herald. Clemens wrote, "Colin, I can hardly keep from sending a hurrah by cable. I would certainly do it, if I wasn't superstitious." His restraint, though wise, was wasted. The end was near. To H. H. Rogers, in New York. 169 Rue de l'Université, Paris, December 22, 94. Dear Mr. Rogers, I seem to be entirely expecting your letter, and also prepared and resigned. But Lord, it shows how little we know ourselves, and how easily we can deceive ourselves. It hit me like a thunderclap. It knocked every rag of sense out of my head, and I went flying here and there and yonder, not knowing what I was doing, and only one clearly defined thought standing up visible and substantial out of the crazy storm drift, that my dream of 10 years was in desperate peril, and out of the 60,000 or 90,000 projects for its rescue that came floating through my skull, not one would hold still long enough for me to examine it and size it up. Have you ever been like that? Not so much so, I reckon. There was another clearly defined idea: I must be there and see it die. That is, if it must die, and maybe if I were there we might hatch up some next to impossible way to make it take up its bed and take a walk. So, at the end of 4 hours I started, still whirling, and walked over to the Rue Scribe 4 p.m. and asked a question or two, and was told I should be running a big risk if I took the 9 p.m. train for London and Southampton. Better come right along at 6:52 per Havre special, and step aboard the New York all easy and comfortable. Very. And I about 2 miles from home, with no packing done. Then it occurred to me that none of these salvation notions, that were whirlwinding through my head, could be examined or made available, unless at least a month's time could be secured. So I cabled you, and said to myself, that I would take the French steamer tomorrow, which will be Sunday, By bedtime, Mrs. Clemens had reasoned me into a fairly rational and contented state of mind. But of course it didn't last long. So I went on thinking, mixing it with a smoke in the dressing room once an hour until dawn this morning. Result, a sane resolution. No matter what your answer to my cable might be, I would hold still, and not sail until I should get an answer to this present letter which I am now writing, or a cable answer from you saying, Omer Amen. I have slept 6 hours, my pond has clarified, and I find the sediment of my 70,000 projects to be of this character. Several pages of suggestions for reconstructing the machine follow. Don't say I'm wild, for really I'm sane again this morning. I am going right along with Joan now, and wait untroubled till I hear from you. If you think I can be of the least use, cable me home. I can write Joan on board ship, and lose no time. Also, I could discuss my plan with the publisher for a deluxe Joan, time being an object, for some of the pictures could be made over here cheaply and quickly, but would cost much time and money in America. If the meeting should decide to quit business January 4, I'd like to have Stoker stopped from paying in any more money, if Miss Harrison doesn't mind that disagreeable job. And I'll have to write them too, of course. With love, S50. Clemens. The toker of this letter was Bram Stoker, long associated with Sir Henry Irving. Irving himself had also taken stock in the machine. The address, 169 Rue de l'Universite, whence these letters are written, was the beautiful studio home of the artist Pomeroy which they had taken for the winter. To H.H. Rogers, in New York. 169 Rue de l'Universite, Paris, December 27, 94. Dear Mr. Rogers, notwithstanding your art, is LD and hard, you make a body choke up. I know you mean every word you say, and I do take it in the same spirit in which you tender it. I shall keep your regard, while we two live that I know, for I shall always remember what you have done for me, and that will ensure me against ever doing anything that could forfeit it or impair it. I am 59 years old, yet I never had a friend before who put out a hand, and tried to pull me ashore, when he found me in deep waters. It is 6 days or 7 days ago that I lived through that despairing day, and then through a night without sleep, then settled down next day into my right mind, or thereabouts, and wrote you. I put in the rest of that day till 7 p.m. plenty comfortably enough writing a long chapter of my book, then went to a masked ball blacked up as Uncle Remus, taking Clara along, and we had a good time. I have lost no day since, and suffered no discomfort to speak of, but drove my troubles out of my mind, and had good success in keeping them out through watchfulness. I have done a good week's work, and put the book a good way ahead in the great trial, which is the difficult part which requires the most thought and carefulness. I cannot see the end of the trial yet, but I am on the road. I am creeping surely toward it. Why not leave them all to me? My business bothers? I take you by the hand. I jump at the chance. I ought to be ashamed, and I am trying my best to be ashamed, and yet I do jump at the chance in spite of it. I don't want to write Irving, and I don't want to write Stoker. It doesn't seem as if I could. But I can suggest something for you to write them. And then if you see that I am unwise, you can write them something quite different. Now this is my idea. 1. To return Stoker's $100 to him, and keep his stock. 2. And tell Irving that when luck turns with me, I will make good to him what the salvage from the dead company fails to pay him of his $500. P.S. Madam says no, I must face the music. So I enclose my effort, to be used if you approve, but not otherwise. There. Now if you will alter it to suit your judgment and bang away, I shall be eternally obliged. We shall try to find a tenant for our Hartford house. Not an easy matter, for it costs heavily to live in. We can never live in it again, though it would break the family's hearts, if they could believe it. Nothing daunts Mrs. Clemens or makes the world look black to her, which is the reason I haven't drowned myself. We all send our deepest and warmest greetings to you, and all of yours, and a happy new year. S50. Clemens. Enclosure. My dear Stoker, I am not dating this, because it is not to be mailed at present. When it reaches you, it will mean that there is a hitch in my machine-enterprise, a hitch so serious as to make it take to itself the aspect of a dissolved dream. This letter, then, will contain check for the $100 which you have paid. And will you tell Irving for me? I can't get up courage enough to talk about this misfortune myself, except to you, whom by good luck I haven't damaged, yet that when the wreckage presently floats ashore he will get a good deal of his $500 back, and a dab at a time I will make up to him the rest. I'm not feeling as fine as I was when I saw you there in your home. Please remember me kindly to Mrs. Stoker. I gave up that London lecture-project entirely. Had to, there's never been a chance since to find the time. Sincerely yours, S50. Clemens. XXXV, Letters, 1895-96, to H.H. Rogers and others. Finishing Own of Arc. The Trip Around the World. Death of Susie Clemens, to H.H. Rogers, in New York City. No date. Dear Mr. Rogers, yours of December 21 has arrived, containing the circular to stockholders, and I guess the company will really quit. There doesn't seem to be any other wise course. There's one thing which makes it difficult for me to soberly realize that my 10-year dream is actually dissolved, and that is that it reveries my horoscope. The proverb says, born lucky, always lucky, and I am very superstitious. As a small boy I was notoriously lucky. It was usual for one or two of our lads, per annum, to get drowned in the Mississippi, or in Bear Creek, but I was pulled out in a 2-3 drowned condition 9 times, before I learned to swim, and was considered to be a cat in disguise. When the Pennsylvania blew up and the Telegraph reported my brother as fatally injured with 60 others, but made no mention of me, my uncle said to my mother, T means that Sam was somewhere else, after being on that boat a year and a half, he was born lucky. Yes, I was somewhere else. I am so superstitious that I have always been afraid to have business dealings with certain relatives and friends of mine, because they were unlucky people. All my life I have stumbled upon lucky chances of large size, and whenever they were wasted it was because of my own stupidity and carelessness. And so I have felt entirely certain that that machine would turn up trumps eventually. It disappointed me lots of times, but I couldn't shake off the confidence of a lifetime in my luck. Well, whatever I get out of the wreckage will be due to good luck, the good luck of getting you into the scheme, for, but for that, there wouldn't be any wreckage. It would be total loss. I wish you had been in at the beginning. Then we should have had the good luck to step promptly ashore. Miss Harrison has had a dream which promises me a large bank account, and I want her to go ahead and dream it twice more, so as to make the prediction sure to be fulfilled. I've got a first-rate subject for a book. It kept me awake all night, and I began it, and completed it in my mind. The minute I finish Joan, I will take it up. Love and Happy New Year to you all. Sincerely yours, S50. Clemens. This was about the end of the machine interests so far as Clemens was concerned. Page succeeded in getting some new people interested, but nothing important happened, or that in any way affected Mark Twain. Characteristically, he put the whole matter behind him, and plunged into his work, facing comparative poverty and a burden of debts with a stout heart. The beginning of the new year found him really poorer in purse than he had ever been in his life, but certainly not crushed, or even discouraged, at least, not permanently and never more industrious or capable. To H.H. Rogers, in New York City. 169 Rue de l'Universite, Paris, January 23, 95. Dear Mr. Rogers, after I wrote you, Two or three days ago I thought I would make a holiday of the rest of the day, the second deliberate holiday, since I had the gout. On the first holiday I wrote a tale of about 600 words, which was 3 days' work in one. And this time I did 800 before midnight. I got nothing out of that first holiday, but the recreation of it, for I condemned the work after careful reading and some revision. But this time I fared better. I finished the Huck Finn tale, that lies in your safe, and am satisfied with it. The Bachelor Syndicate, 117 Tribune Building, one day story of 500 words, lowest limit of their London agent, for $1,000, and offer to blank the check on delivery, and it was partly to meet that demand that I took that other holiday. So as I have no short story that suits me and can't and shan't make promises, the best I can do is to offer the longer one which I finished on my second holiday. I'm Sawyer, detective. It makes 27 or 28,000 words, and is really written for grown folks, though I expect young folk to read it too. It transfers to the banks of the Mississippi the incidents of a strange murder which was committed in Sweden in old times. I'll refer applicants for a sight of the story to your Miss Harrison. Secretary to Mr. Rogers. Yours sincerely, S50. Clemens. Gutenberg Edition. End of chapter.